Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, June 28th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The double SADC troika avoids deliberations on Zimbabwe's deteriorating economic situation.
What the Basotho have done instead is to come to Botswana when there's a SADC meeting to make sure that their agenda is followed. Rather than going to London and then say, pass it through our ambassador, it's more direct.
Civil servants discuss proposals by government to pay workers $100 each this month.
We have not yet taken a position. This option was actually brought to yesterday's meeting. If they brought it earlier, of course, yesterday would have come up with an answer.
And Zimbabweans say they hope MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai will recover soon from colon cancer amid fear that his party may plunge into a crisis.
I'm afraid of infighting in the party, and we were looking forward to be together in 2018 for the final push.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Regional leaders, including President Robert Mugabe, met in Gaborone, Botswana, for the Southern African Development Double Troika meeting today, but Zimbabwe was not on the agenda. Instead, focus on political instability in Lesotho. Last month, a pressure group based in the United Kingdom Zimbabwe Vigil petitioned Botswana President and SADC Chairperson Ian Khama to tackle what they called the deepening political and economic crisis in Zimbabwe. From Gaborone, Botswana, Studio 7 correspondent Martin Gwenya filed this report.
The loudest cheers at the meeting were reserved for Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe, who looked exhausted as he made his way into the SADC Double Troika meeting venue. He was the last man in as he walked gingerly after a short flight from Harare last night. To his relief, Zimbabwe was not on the agenda as focus was on Lesotho's political instability, which fled following the murder of top army official Brigadier Maparango Muhao last year. Last month, the Zimbabwean pressure group Zimbabwe Vigil petitioned Khama in his capacity as SADC chairperson, arguing the political and economic situation was deteriorating in the homeland. The group wanted Khama as the SADC chairperson to reintroduce Zimbabwe into regional bloc's agenda. But when leaders, including President Robert Mugabe, convened in Gaborone this afternoon, Zimbabwe was not discussed. The double troika consists of six countries: Zimbabwe, Botswana, Mozambique, Tanzania, and Swaziland and South Africa. One disappointed Zimbabwean, Mr. Brighton Ndlovu, who was at the meeting venue, said Zimbabweans need to do more to get SADC to listen to their concerns.
What the Basotho have done instead is to come to Botswana when there's a SADC meeting and make sure that their issues are put on the agenda by coming here and lobbying the presidents here. We are aware that there are quite a number of them from three opposition parties. At the very least, there is the widow of the murdered Lesotho Defense Force commander, and there are lobby groups from Lesotho, human rights groups, who are all here to pressure SADC in person to make sure that their agenda is followed. Rather than going to London and then say, pass it through our ambassador, it's more direct. This is the crowd that wants to listen to your complaints.
He says Lesotho has aggressively pursued SADC to act on what it believes are gross human rights violations and their signs of progress. Leaders held a closed-door session before the SADC Executive Secretary Stegomena Lawrence Taxi and SADC Minister's Chairperson Vincent Moitoi addressed the media on the outcome of the meeting. Deputy Leader of the Opposition Basotho Party and former Lesotho Home Affairs Minister Mr. Joang Molapo told Studio 7 was happy with the progress made.
We are very, very appreciative of the efforts of SADC. We just read the communique, and SADC really has answered the prayers of the Basotho people. This is a statement of real determination on the part of SADC to help Lesotho bring an end to its problem.
The summit urged all the Lesotho opposition members in exile to return home to participate in reforms towards restoring the rule of law. Reporting for Studio 7 in Gaborone, Botswana, this is Martin Gwenya.
Apex Council Chairperson Cecilia Alexander says civil servants unions are currently consulting members over government proposals to pay each worker $100 this month, following Zimbabwe's failure to meet its financial obligations this month. The government says this money to be paid Friday is designed to cushion them from expected challenges until they get paid next week and in 2 weeks' time. This follows another deadlock at yesterday's meeting where workers insisted that they should be paid June salaries this month and not in July as proposed by government. Alexander tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri they've also called for a labor forum on Saturday where all civil servants will be given the opportunity to contribute to the discussion.
Yesterday we met government and insisted on our position that workers will not be able to report for work because they are incapacitated to do so. That is if they fail to pay them their salaries on the due date. And the government came up with a stopgap measure, of course, after protracted discussions, to say they are offering to pay every civil servant who has been affected $100 on Friday, so to capacitate them to come to work.
And what was your position on this proposal?
We have not yet taken a position. This option was actually brought to the yesterday's meeting. If they brought it earlier, of course, yesterday would have come up with an answer. But unfortunately, we are only representatives. We have to go back to the people, consult the people, and bring back whatever the people say, the position that they take.
When are you expecting to get a response from your members and then meet again with the government?
I'm speaking, Jonga, all our unions, the 13 unions, under the Apex Council and also the unions from health sector, they are busy consulting their members. They are actually in the process of consulting. So we will meet and consolidate. I think they are doing to me that we are only representatives. What we bring to the table is what comes to the union. So when we go to government, we articulate the position of workers. When we go back to workers, we articulate the position of government. But then if we come up with a position as Apex Council, we will definitely communicate with government.
That was Apex Council Chairperson Cecilia Alexander from Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
Zimbabweans from all walks of life in Mutare expressed shock at the news that the country's main opposition party leader, Morgan Richard Tsvangirai, has colon cancer. The MDCT leader revealed this yesterday, raising alarm among supporters that the party may face serious challenges while the former trade unionist is receiving treatment in South Africa. Our reporter Loida Moyo has more details from Mutare.
Local resident Louis Kashiri says Tsvangirai's illness may trigger internal factionalism in the party.
It is a very big blow to the opposition party in Zimbabwe, especially with the political climate which is in Zimbabwe right now. He is like the last man standing who we were counting on to fight the ruling party. And if Tsvangirai gets sick or is diagnosed with cancer, which is a very serious disease, I'm afraid of infighting in the party. And we were looking forward to be together in 2018 for the final push.
Several other residents, including Rutendo Hungwe, expressed the same sentiments, hoping for his speedy recovery.
Yeah, this is a tough situation to his family and his supporters. I wish him a quick recovery.
MDCT activist Mason Komo of Zimta Seba Binimtare said the news of Tsvangirai's illness has affected a lot of people who hope that God will help him to recover from the disease.
It is with great sadness that we have learned of his illness, and we hope the Lord to be with him and that he will be treated urgently. And we hope that his wife will keep on supporting him. And the Lord is the keeper of all of us. And we know that he is with the Lord and everything will be well.
ZANU-PF activist Robson Ngarivume said it is said that Mr. Tsvangirai has cancer of the colon. The MDCT leader is currently in South Africa where he is receiving chemotherapy. The MDCT leadership says it is unlikely that the party will plunge into a crisis as Tsvangirai gets some medical attention. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mutare, this is Loida Moyo.
In a related development, there was conflict in the House of Assembly today over the Local Government Laws Amendment Bill, with ZANU-PF makers fast-tracking it in the House of Assembly. Indications are that the bill will be passed by the House of Assembly and Senate before being signed into law by President Robert Mugabe, despite strong public objections. ZANU-PF has a majority in both houses.
The bill seeks to give the Minister of Local Government power to suspend or dismiss corrupt and underperforming councillors and city officials. The minister is currently engaged in conflicts with various councils led by the MDCT. Meanwhile, Reverend Hussein Sibanda of the Zimbabwe Christian Alliance says the organization will be holding a meeting on legislative processes in Bulawayo tomorrow, which will be attended by pastors and other stakeholders.
Zimbabwe Christian Alliance, in partnership with the Southern African Parliamentary Support Trust, we have about 150 church leaders from the southern region of Zimbabwe. This is Makerere, South, North, Bulawayo, Mashingo, and Midlands. That will come together and look at the parliamentary processes, how they can influence legislation. A special interest to the church leaders is in the NPRC bill, which is the peace and reconciliation process, and also the local government bill. They want to see where are spaces where churches get in there, so that they can be effective in influencing the national discourse. And also, we are going to be discussing how to be engaged with the current crisis that is facing the country. We've got together even other pastors from Harare to come to join us so that we can be able to put our heads together and see how we can resolve some of the economic challenges facing us, some of the governance crisis that is facing this nation.
That was Reverend Hussein Sibanda of the Zimbabwe Christian Alliance speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Bulawayo.
The late PF ZAPU leader and Zimbabwe's former Vice President Joshua Mkabuko Nyongolo Nkomo crafted and attempted to implement a comprehensive Black economic empowerment program at Independence in 1980 as his party bought offices, houses, buildings and farms in an effort to transfer wealth from white colonial rulers to indigenous blacks. This was part of a grand plan to ensure that former freedom fighters and the masses benefited from the liberation struggle following a brutal war that claimed thousands of lives.
Some Zimbabweans say Nkomo's vision on black economic empowerment, including the transfer of land to local people, has been largely distorted by President Robert Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF. In this second edition of a six-part series on the life and legacy of the late Vice President, our correspondent Gandri Maramba looks at Nkomo's efforts to empower blacks.
When Zimbabwe attained independence in 1980, the Zimbabwe African People's Union, or ZAPU, which was led by Nkomo, purchased farms, several upmarket buildings like Magnet House, currently housing the Central Intelligence Organization in Bulawayo, the Castle Arms Motel, and had some cattle and chicken projects in most parts of the country that were supposed to be run under a company called Nitram Properties. Members of his party's armed wing, the Zimbabwe People's Revolutionary Army, or ZIPRA, were asked to contribute at least $50 each towards these projects. All this went up in smoke after Nkomo was accused by Mr. Mugabe of attempting to topple him. The government seized all the properties, claiming that they were being used for cashing arms. Nkomo dismissed the allegations as wishful thinking. A couple of years after independence and following a peace accord he signed with the then Prime Minister Robert Mugabe, Nkomo championed the formation of Development Trust of Zimbabwe, which was supposed to benefit Zimbabweans through supplying beef and some farm produce to local and international markets. Apart from that, Nkomo's party bought lumbering equipment worth billions of dollars from Britain, meat processing machines for a proposed beef processing plant, and medical equipment for Ekurhuleni Hospital in Bulawayo. Indications are that the lumbering equipment vanished at the Customs Department, while Ekurhuleni Hospital and most of the entities he set up are now lying idle. Some Masingo residents say Nkomo's vision in empowering blacks appears to have been a victim of political clashes between PF ZAPU and ZANU-PF and greediness among some top ruling party officials. Some of the critics is Zivanai Mzorodzi, a local resident, who says Nkomo's vision was derailed through the sidelining of the former vice president by the ruling elite. Mzorodzi says This had a negative impact on youth, women and other groups in Zimbabwe.
Dr. Ngomo's vision was not achieved. Why? Because of greedy politicians within ZANU-PF hierarchy. As it stands, the youth, women and people with disabilities never benefited from this initiative. That land was not fairly distributed.
Veteran Mashingo nationalist and former ZANU-PF provincial leader, Alderman Anton Pedzisa, who was detained for close to 10 years together with Mr. Mugabe, and the late national hero, says Ngomo died a bitter man, as the ZANU-PF government even grabbed his properties while he was still alive.
Before I go to individuals, his farms were even taken by ZANU during, when he was still alive. He had bought some properties which was land. And when Joshua Nkomo was talking of land, he was not only talking of land, agricultural land, he was talking land and its natural resources, that they should be redistributed equitably among all Zimbabweans. But this is not the case. When the land reform was done, the intention was not actually to satisfy the needs of the nation, but individuals. In my case, I don't even have a piece of land, but I suffered. I nearly got hanged for liberating this country. And many a lot who have submitted, sacrificed their lives towards the liberation of this country, they don't have any piece of land as of today.
Brighton Ramos echoes the same sentiments, noting that he is not happy with the way the land was grabbed from white commercial farmers and parceled out to staunch ZANU-PF supporters.
I'm not happy at all with how the land reform program was fast-tracked. The intended beneficiaries never benefited.
Historian and government critic Dr. Takawafira Zhou says Father Zimbabwe may be turning in his grave over the manner in which the land reform program was conducted in the country.
I think the point must be clear that the land reform per se is brilliant, but the way the land reform was carried out, particularly from 2000, leaves a lot to be desired. Land reform happened before 2000 in a proper manner, from particularly 1985 to about 1990, in a better manner, although Zimbabwe still had problems because they were still fighting between ZAPU and ZANU. There was no unity. So the whole concept of land reform from 2000 was now a political gimmick, a ZANU-PF way of winning votes. And it did not take into account the concept of productivity, the concept of settling people who would be productive, and the concept of fairness or equity. Because the whole concept is transparency, accountability and equity, which lagged in the process of land reform, because the whole process of land reform was characterized by parceling out land to supporters of ZANU-PF, which was contrary to Nkomo's perception. The whole conception of Nkomo as son of the soil was equitable distribution of land in order to ensure that there was no one person who had multiple farms, as is the case. So Nkomo had the vision, just like other leaders like Stole, had the vision of equitable distribution of land.
But ZANU-PF activist Talent Chivange says the late Nkomo is resting peacefully following the transfer of land from white commercial farmers.
Right now, more than 350,000 families in Zimbabwe. But I'll tell you that at present, Dr. Nkomo right now is a happy man, wherever he is, to note that over close to 500,000 people have benefited through the land reform, through indigenization, through economic empowerment, the policies that the party was, is, and will continue to pursue for the benefit of its people.
But some residents maintain that the land reform program was not conducted in a fair manner, as proposed by the late vice president, who would have wanted to see the redistribution of land without discriminating people along political lines. Reporting for Studio 7 in Masvingo, this is Country Maramba.
Coming up,
Buy Zimbabwe campaign welcomes government's move to ban some imports.
And Zimbabweans attend an AIDS research conference in Washington, D.C.
Stay tuned. Bye.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Tuesday is another awkward day for Britain as Prime Minister David Cameron travelled to what is now hostile territory in Brussels to meet with EU leaders for the first time since the Brexit vote and face tough questions on how and when Britain plans to start the divorce process.
And President Jacob Zuma must pay back about $500,000 or 3% of the public funds used to upgrade his personal country home, says South Africa's Treasury.
While most consumers are up in arms with the government over the import ban on a number of products, the Buy Zimbabwe campaign, a non-governmental lobbyist group, has applauded the gazetting of the statutory instrument. The instrument was suspended after shoppers rioted at the Beitbridge border post and is set to be effected at the end of this month. The government argues that the amendment of the statutory instrument, which was formulated by the Rhodesian government in 1974 as a way of countering sanctions, is a timely measure to rein in the ballooning import bill. By Zimbabwe campaign chief executive officer Munyaradzi Wengwerere tells Studio 7 that the amendment does not ban imports.
But what they've done is apply some kind of derogation that allows the country to deal with the challenges that are happening in the country. And what that means is that they've put up an administrative measure which has listed a number of products that are available in Zimbabwe and said for this one, if you want to bring them into the country, it won't be under an open arrangement. You need to get a license from the Ministry of Industry and Commerce. That's what has generally been termed a ban, but it's a managed importation of products.
In a nutshell, what would you say are the benefits of this administrative measure?
Look, the point is that Zimbabwe has had a cumulative every year on year for the last 5 years. We are running an import bill that averages about $7 billion and a net deficit every year of $3 billion. And you can see it with what is going on in the country. It's unsustainable. Now there are no monies in the bank. Companies are failing to bring in needed raw material. So one of the major issues is we need to balance our current account. We need to balance between the imports that are coming into the country and our ability to create the money that goes out of the country. So yes, on the one side, we need to enhance our ability to export. But also, we need to make sure that the imports do not affect the local businesses.
Zimbabwean local goods are overpriced because they are based on the US dollar when compared to goods from South Africa. What do you make of that?
Correct. Generally, it is true. Because the US dollar is a very strong currency. And when a US dollar is used in a context of Zimbabwe, which is among the least competitive countries, then you don't expect to see a better product at the end. However, that being said, it is a generalization. You have industries, such as the cooking oil industry, that from a market share against imports of 95% to 5%, 5% of local, 95%, they managed to deal with that by addressing prices, packaging, engagement with consumers, and they managed to beat South African companies in terms of price. So there are industries in Zimbabwe that have matched international products. But it's true as well, the bulk are still fairly highly priced over imported products.
That was Chief Executive Officer Munyaradzi Wengwere of the Buy Zimbabwe campaign. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare. Industry Minister Mike Bima says there's no going back on the import ban.
The SI-64 is still on. What we've done is to give people some period of grace to say we will allow those who had initiated export procedures before the SI was announced. We will allow goods to come in, but effective from 1st of July, we won't allow those goods to come in unless one can produce a license.
Don't miss that interview tomorrow here on Studio 7.
Now we'll hand you over to Choniso Jani with the Time to Engage.
Hello, Zimbabwe. This is Chioneso Jani, your host for Time to Engage, where the voices of Zimbabwe's youth are heard. Today, we have a fascinating young man in this place, and his name is Charles Mugawiri Jr. Hi, Charles.
Hi, Chioneso. How are you doing?
I'm great. Tell us more about this film career of yours?
The film Far From Yesterday got nominated for the NAMAS Best Movie of the Year. That was quite amazing, considering that it was a debut film that I'd done. What was also more amazing was the cast that I got to work with and the 7-year-old girl who won Best Actress of the Year.
Did you always know that you're going filmmaking?
I always wanted to do it since I was 14. I loved creating stories, creating characters, and creating new worlds. It's been a process. I only got to make the chance to make my first film when I was 18, called House Sitter. That got well received online. From there on, I just wanted to do it more and more.
Can you tell me about the relationship with your father? Tell us about that.
Being in this kind of environment, if you want to do art, anything like music or film or anything else art-related, it's very hard to get the kind of support, especially from your parents or from your family, that you would need. Because a lot of people think that those are not very lucrative careers or decisions to base all your life and education on. So I managed to get quite a good support base from my family. I mean, they actually wanted to take me to the best university. They linked me up with the really good mentors who were producers, and that's how I jump-started my career.
As an upcoming film producer, so what can you say in relation to filmmaking in Zimbabwe right now?
This year, more than ever, I would say there's a lot more filmmaking that is being done before, because now there are more distribution networks and channels that are now available for filmmakers. So there's a lot more content now that's out there. It's a pretty exciting process to see, and we also can't wait for the new digitalization age, or at least that's going to hit the industry, and we'll see how that goes.
So do you feel that the environment is conducive for upcoming young people like you?
I think it's a matter of perspective. Some people can see it as a glass half full or glass half empty. Some people are leaving the country because they want to do film elsewhere in Hollywood or in South Africa. And then some people are actually moving back here or staying here because they see opportunity only. For me, I say there's a lot of opportunity. I think I'm doing pretty well. I'll say I'm pretty blessed. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Thank you for being with us, Mr. Charles.
All right, sure.
And that was Charles Mugawiri Jr. And I am your host, Chiona Sojani, for Time to Engage.
Some people living with HIV/AIDS say it is imperative to closely monitor clinical trials used to help fight the disease, as treatment options should be both safe and ethical. We hear from Martha Tolana, one of the participants at a conference of people living with HIV/AIDS here in Washington, D.C.
At this meeting, we are reviewing studies that are ongoing, studies that have just completed, and my role on that committee, together with other committee members, is to look at the ethical issues around clinical trials to ensure that communities, participants are treated fairly, communities know about the results, about what is happening in the research, and that there's no exploitation, and that also communities also are responsible as they participate in research.
Why is it important for you to have such conferences?
It is important because we review the progress of studies. We also compare notes with other countries. Since the research is happening in several sites, we compare notes, we learn lessons from each other, and we also learn best practices that we can adapt in the countries. We also share with other community representatives from other countries. It's a big meeting where a lot of learning and sharing happens, and also a lot of suggestions around what needs to be done, what are the needs, particularly from us as community members, what are the needs from the communities.
That was Martha Tolana, one of the participants at the 2016 AIDS Clinical Trials Group Conference in Washington, D.C.
And remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when host of the Youth Forum will be talking with listeners about political activism among youths in Zimbabwe.
Now to recap on today's top stories.
The double SADC troika avoids deliberations on Zimbabwe's deteriorating economic situation.
And as Zimbabweans say they hope MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai will recover from colon cancer amid fears that his party may plunge into a crisis.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele, hosted by me. This is Chris Gandhi. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Marvelous Mplanganya Huye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.